Thank you, colleagues. We're back in session.
Recording in progress.
Can you proceed? Oh, Advocate Bauer.
Thank you. Mr. Chilele, we were at paragraph 51 of your affidavit. We were at paragraph 51 of your affidavit, and it details that what then transpires is that due to circumstances in the organization with the acting CEO becoming ill and the post being vacant, there was a need for the post to be filled. And then the BP instructed that Mr. Mashlango be offered a short-term contract for 3 months, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And it was short-term specifically because of the two outstanding issues of his labor court matter and his security clearance.
That's correct.
You say that you didn't really know at that stage that the security clearance would be hampered by the labor court proceedings, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Right. There was then a performance agreement which was concluded, and it was dated from 1 May 2018 to 31 March 2019, which sets out these functions. And I inquired from you, why would you have concluded a performance agreement for a one-year period when he was only on a three-month contract? Could you explain that?
Yes, when the contract was extended after 3 months, then it was then that the performance agreement was, that is what was concluded. So it had to be backdated then from the 1st of May, because we had to account for the period he started working at the institution.
All right. And you're referring to the short-term contract that was extended as reflected in paragraph 56 of your affidavit from 1 August 2018 to 31 July 2019. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
And you say that this was done in order, he got a year's period, even though neither of the requirements or conditions for his employment had as such been met. Correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. Now, if we just go up to paragraph 54 of your affidavit, before I go past it. There was a staff meeting, at the very first staff meeting, at which the CEO was introduced to the staff. The issue of his dismissal from his previous employment was raised. Correct?
That's correct, yes.
And you say that the staff was informed by the PP that the matter was pending at the Labour Court and that the court process should be allowed to take its course. And that for that
correct.
Reason, pointed. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
Right. And you then further detail that he made a disclosure of what was then a criminal case that was pending, and that was not regarded as being an impediment.
That is correct, yes.
Right. Now, you then say you were instructed by the PP to prepare for a further fixed term contract ending 23rd April. Paragraph 56, right?
That's correct, yes.
At the time when you were asked to do so, were you aware that the SSA had already indicated that it would not issue a security clearance pending the finalization of the Labour Court proceedings?
I was not aware, Chair. That is why the issue of security clearance, even in that employment contract, was still subject to. It was still one of the requirements that had to be met to confirm employment.
You've only discovered that in consultation with the evidence leaders that letter existed. Is that so?
Yes.
Now, you then recalled a meeting which occurred in the latter part of 2019 when you were called to a meeting at the PP's office, which dealt with in 58 of your affidavit. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I was called to PP's office where PP indicated that there were external people that were meeting with her and other officials in the institution. So he requested me to attend that meeting and explain the appointment of Mr. Mashangu as the CEO.
And you could identify two people who was at the meeting, Advocate Niembi and Advocate Sikakani Isi, and another person you can't recall, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And you provided the information you were asked to provide. What transpired after that?
Well, after explaining to the meeting how Mr. Mahla was appointed, then I was excused from the meeting. So I don't know what happened after I've left the meeting.
And then in December, you received the call from the PP.
Yes,
what did she relay?
Yes, I was home in December. I was on leave. I received a call from the PP telling me that she was going to send a letter to me. I must draft a response to that letter. So she did not say what was the letter about. So I received, that is a letter then from the PP, which was Mr. Mashlangu's resignation. Then I drafted a response to that letter for PP's submission.
Right. So the next employee we detail is Ms. Cleopatra Musana on paragraph 60. And the issue of her labor dispute had been raised in earlier evidence before the committee. She was initially appointed as a spokesperson in 2017 for a 5-year period, correct?
But that is correct.
She has subsequently left the organization, giving 24-hour notice. Right.
That is correct.
Right. Now, could you tell us what occurred with, there were two essential labor disputes that arose. Advise us as to what was the first issue and how you got involved in this.
Okay, the first issue, I was phoned by the PP's office one Monday morning, and then I was asked to go to the PP's boardroom. When I got there, there was the then chief of staff and also Ms. Musana in the boardroom. And then PP joined the meeting, that is a few minutes later. And then PP was upset. She said she could no longer work with Cleo because she's tired of doing Cleo's work and Cleo is disrespecting her. So she can no longer work with her, and Cleo must go and serve notice at home. And then at that point I intervened. That is, I asked PP that Cleo be excused from the meeting. And then Cleo was excused from the meeting. And then I said to PP that she has just dismissed Cleo without following the process. She cannot do that. And then there was an argument, a short argument about that final, but ultimately we asked PP that we are aware that he no longer wants to work with Cleo, and she must leave this matter with us. We will deal with it as HR, that is, and legal services and the chief of staff. So that was the end of the meeting.
Did you know what was the reason why PP no longer wanted to work with her? What had she done that had caused that?
Well, I assume that it has to do with Cleo's work, because PP said she is tired of doing Cleo's work. So she was not specific what actually happened.
Right. And what was the nature of the disrespect that was indicated to you?
Well, the example PP made in the meeting was that Cleo called her by her first name.
Ms. Musana then went home, and you then had a meeting with the acting chief of staff, the head of legal services, and you indicated to Ms. Musana that the PP no longer wanted to work with her, and that you would then consider alternative options within the organization, correct?
That's correct, yes.
You then say that the acting CEO, Ms. Motsitsi, was not prepared to sign off on her contract because it was quite a huge amount of money that would have to be paid out, correct?
Yes, that is correct. That was one of the options we're looking at.
Right. You then convened, you and the acting CEO convened a meeting with Ms. Motsana. Can you tell me what transpired at that meeting?
Okay, the purpose of the meeting was to consult Ms. Motsana on her transfer from the position of spokesperson to communication and stakeholder management branch. So we were in the acting CEO's office. It was myself, the acting CEO, and Ms. Motsana. When we were about to start the meeting, then the acting CEO, Ms. Motsitsi, received a call from PP, and then she left the meeting for about 30 to 45 minutes. And then when she came back, that is, she just issued a letter that we were prepared, which we're going to issue to Ms. Motsana after discussions and consultation. Then he just issued the letter and said that I've done my part, here's the letter. Then that was the end of the meeting.
And Ms. Motsana was then redeployed to the position Senior Manager Communications and Stakeholders Engagement, correct?
That letter was transferring her to that position. The purpose of that meeting was to consult with her on that transfer.
Right. So, but did Ms. Motsana didn't want to be transferred?
No, he didn't want to.
She wanted to remain in the job she was, and she wanted to know precisely why she was being moved, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. She then declared an unfair labor dispute. She took you to the CCMA. She was then awarded 6 months remuneration, right?
That's correct, yes.
And you recommended that it be paid because it was clearly a demotion, albeit at the same salary level, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Right. There was then a second labor dispute that arose after this was settled. Well, she came back to work and she then left and she lodged a dispute of constructive dismissal. Correct?
Yes, she came back to work, then she resigned, and then after that she declared a dispute on constructive dismissal.
She won the matter at the CCMA and she was given a further 6 months salary on the basis of legal advice and views within the organization. The matter's then been taken on review to the Labor Court.
That is correct.
Right. And it's still pending, isn't that so, Mr. Chilele?
Yes, it's still pending.
And, okay. Now we come to Mr. Ndo. Mr. Ndo resigned on 1 November from the position of executive manager, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And the PP was informed of his resignation on 5 November and accepted it, correct?
That's correct.
Right. And so effectively his last working day would have, it's a 30-day notice period, so his last working day would have been 30 November.
That's correct.
Correct?
Yes.
At the time when he resigned, was there any disciplinary charges that had been brought against him?
We were busy drafting charges. He had not been, that has not been brought to his attention.
So had there been charges finalized at that stage? No.
Not yet.
So what had transpired was there was allegations made against him. And I'm going to just take you through the chronology quite quickly. There were allegations made against him, and pending an investigation, he was suspended in April 2017, correct?
That's correct.
Right. He resigned from the organization, I think, let me just work out, some 19 months later, correct?
That's correct, yes.
There was an external law firm that was engaged to investigate the charges, and they recommended that he not be charged.
That's correct, yes. It exonerated him. Yes.
Right. And the CEO then informed him accordingly. Correct?
That's correct.
You have a grievance policy in the organization, and the complainant then, according to that grievance policy, appealed to the public protector in August 2017. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right. So now, we're now 4 months into the process, and there's, and what does the grievance policy say? It says that the PPO delegated authority has 10 days to consider and conclude the grievance and communicate the decision. Did that occur?
It did not happen within 10 days as required by the grievance procedure.
In October, which was 3 months later, the PP sought the assistance of the Commission of Gender Equality, and they did what is called a perusal or an analysis of the investigative report and an appeal memo. Well, they were charged to do an analysis of the investigation report and the appeal memo and call witnesses. Correct?
That's correct, yes.
Right. What did they do? They, if you look at 91.8, they only looked at the investigation report and the appeal memo. Correct?
That's correct.
And they, in a letter, informed that there was a prima facie case to be answered and recommended that clause 4.4.2 of the grievance policy be followed to finalize the matter.
That is correct.
Right. And if the complainant was not satisfied, she would then need to take the to an external dispute resolution mechanism under the Labor Relations Act.
That is correct.
Right. Then you informed Mr. Ndoh that the matter had been referred to the CGE.
Yes.
Can you recall when you did that, Mr. Chilela? Let me ask the question differently. Mr. Chilela, have you been able to find the letter that you've sent?
No, I've not been able to find the letter.
Okay. So to the best of your recollection, can you remember more or less when you would have sent the letter?
I think it was around October 2017. I'm subject to correction. I can't exactly remember.
Okay. All right. In January 2018, 9 months later, there's a decision that a formal disciplinary hearing be instituted with an internal chairperson. Correct?
That's correct.
And this was relayed to the complainant a few days later, who was unhappy with the appointment of the internal chairperson.
Yes.
Correct? What was your view at that stage?
When we got the response from the outcome of the CGE investigation, when they said the accused employee had a case to answer, and then PP in the submission indicated that then that is the process, the judgment process must be instituted, indicating that it must be done internally. That is, the chairperson and the prosecutor must be internal. And then the complainant was informed about that decision. She was not happy because she was saying that the accused employee was a senior, was an executive. So she's not comfortable that she thought that it would not be fair that this be done internally. So she then appealed, that is, to PP that this must be dealt with externally, not internally. Okay. And then from, okay.
Continue, Mr.
From us as HR, that is, we took it as she was not in agreement of PP's decision. So our view was that she was requesting PP to change or to review her decision. And then we advised that, well, if he is not happy with PP's decision, then the matter has been exhausted internally. Then she can utilize external, that is, requests.
Okay. It was then in March of 2018 that the PP reiterated that a formal disciplinary proceeding should be instituted, correct?
That's correct.
Did you inform Mr. Ndawa at that stage about it?
No, I don't remember doing that.
Right. And then 5 months later, the PP appointed a member of the Public Service Commission as an employer representative to finalize the charge sheet and present evidence, correct?
That's correct.
And then by 14th November, that Public Service Commission representative indicated the charges was not yet finalized.
That's correct.
Correct? Right. And it was then indicated that these charges would be ready by 23 November and that the hearing should be convened effectively a few days before his resignation would be finished. Notice period would be completed. And that, in fact, what then transpired was that the charges were completed earlier. They were served on Mr. Ndawa on 16th of November. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
But the disciplinary proceedings didn't occur because Mr. Ndawa was on sick leave at the time. It was postponed, seen idea, and never came to fruition. Correct?
That's correct, because he had left the organization.
Do you have any documentation or knowledge that, or any documentation under your control that reflect Mr. Ndell had been informed prior to his resignation that his charges would be preferred against him?
No.
Now, the committee had evidence from Mr. Kakana, and his matter is still pending before the Labour Court, right? But there's two issues I want to clear up with you. When the PP travels, whether she does that with the CEO or without the CEO, is the staff informed of those travels?
Yes, the communications unit does send, that is, a communication to all staff saying that PP and these people will be attending this event on this date and this place. Yes, that happens.
So that information is not confidential?
No.
Right. If I take you to paragraph 37 of the affidavit of Mr. Kakana, he mentions you in that affidavit. He was moved at the end of November from the... you had a meeting, he says that at the end of November 2017, you had a meeting with him. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
All right, and he was informed that Advocate Mkabane no longer wanted him to work in the private office. Did you tell him that?
Yes.
He then says, when I asked for reasons for this decision, I was told that it was because Advocate Mkabane was of the opinion that I say too much to the lawyers representing the public protector in the review proceedings. Did you indicate such to him?
Yes, that is what people said to me when she told me that she should be moved from the private office.
Okay. Let me then take you to the next person, which is Ms. Pasani Baloy. I'm just going to go through it briefly before I get the time nudge from the chair. Ms. Pasani Baloy, was there any complaints? I'm going to paragraph 98 of your affidavit. Was there any complaints ever raised with you about her employment?
No.
To who did she answer?
Functionally to PP and administratively to CEO.
Okay. Were you provided with any performance assessments in an HR file?
No.
Are you aware of any having been conducted before a service has been terminated?
No, I'm not aware.
You say, how did you find out that, well, you say in 99 that Mr. Mashlango called you and informed you that he would not confirm Ms. Paloi's appointment?
That's correct.
What can you relay the conversation you had with him?
Yes, I was, when he informed him about that, I was surprised because I was made to believe that Ms. Paloi was a good employee, and I was made aware that OPP commended her in her meeting several times. So it took me by surprise that Mr. Mashlango was not confirming her appointment. The other thing which I raised with Mr. Mashlango was that Ms. Paloi, as far as investigation is concerned, his report is not reporting to Mr. Mashlango. So I did not understand how could Mr. Mashlango make such a decision, because he was not reporting to him or that is on her work, especially investigations.
You indicated that he was...
So I raised those concerns with Mr. Mashlango when he informed me about not confirming her appointment.
Okay. You indicated in your affidavit that her being a good employee was not the only determination, but there were other things. Can you elaborate on, did Mr. Mashlango elaborate on what those other things were?
No, he did not say, because I asked, as I said, I could not understand why her employment was terminated, because I believe that she was a good employee. And then he said, no, they are not only looking at that, there are other things. Then I asked what other things, then he did not tell me what other things that is his he looked into.
In respect of Advocate Matlawi, were the charges against him the same as the charges that were brought against Mr. Katana?
No, they were different.
Can you just tell us what they were?
Well, Mr. Matlawi attended a meeting in Bloemfontein, which was addressed by the CEO with our provincial office in Bloemfontein, with staff in Bloemfontein. And then he raised issues in that meeting, which were not correct. And then that is where the charges of Mr. Matlawi emanated from.
What do you mean he raised issues that wasn't correct? Who raised issues, Mr. Matlawi or the CEO?
Mr. Matlawi in the meeting, is in CEO's meeting with staff.
Right. So who raised issues that were incorrect?
It was Mr. Matlawi.
Mr. Matlawi raised the issues. No, wait. Sorry, Mr. Chilela. Let me just take you back. There was a meeting that the CEO addressed the employees at the Bloemfontein office, and he relayed certain information to them. Correct?
Yes.
And what did Mr. Matlawi then do that resulted in being charged?
The issues Mr. Matlawi raised in the meeting were related, for example, to the appointment. I think it was related to the special advisor, and then the organogram that was not consulted in the bargaining forum.
Okay. You were not involved with this directly, were you?
No, I was not. I was not in the meeting.
Now, was Mr. Mashlango informed of the resignation of Advocate Matlawi?
Yes, he was informed.
And how was he informed thereof?
Okay, when a staff member resigns or leaves the organization, a submission is made to the CEO or the PP, depending on the level of the employee. So in this case, the submission was made to Mr. Mashlango, informing Mr. Mashlango that Mr. Mashlango had tendered his resignation.
Right, and that resignation is at GT 14 of your affidavit.
Yes.
at 3460. Correct? So on the 30th of November, you sent Mr. Mashlangu a notification that he was had resigned. Correct?
That's correct.
And if you look at 3463, if you go down, there's something written there. Can you read it, Mr. Chelele?
Yeah, I'll try. HR, please note that I once requested a meeting with Matlawe and it on the 26th November 2018, and I was told he was in court, he was at court. Can I please have proof of leave form?
All right. Now, Mr. Who wrote that, Mr. Chilele? Whose handwriting is that?
It's Mr. Mashlangu's writing.
The disciplinary proceedings against Mr. Matlawe was commenced and set down on the 21st of December, correct?
That's correct.
On whose instructions was that done?
Mr. Mashlangu.
If we go to the next three persons, Ms. Mohaladi, Ms. Sikela, and Mr. Madiba. It was Mr. Mashlangu's decision to institute disciplinary proceedings against him in October 2019, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And they were asked to make representations on the intended disciplinary action.
That's correct.
Did they do so?
Yes, they did.
And there was no mention of a suspension in the letter, correct?
That's correct, yes.
There was then a toing and froing. They were then charged, and eventually the disciplinary proceedings took place subsequently, and in fact it was split between Ms. Mohaladi and Ms. Sikela on the one hand and Mr. Madiba on the other, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Right. Now, the PBSA led the evidence of two witnesses, Ms. Karina van Eerden. Who's that, Mr. Chilele?
She's one of our senior investigators.
Right. Now, she reported to Ms. Mohaladi, correct?
That's correct, yes.
It was suggested by the CEO in evidence. I recall asking him the question as to why was disciplinary proceedings not taken against Ms. van Eerden in the matter. And he indicated that her line management should have done that. Now, if disciplinary proceedings was being taken against the line managers, could they in turn be taking disciplinary proceedings against persons who reported to them?
Yeah, that would be difficult.
They were then found guilty of charges and the chairperson made a recommendation of a sanction of a suspension and without pay for a period of 3 months, coupled with a final warning for Ms. Mohaladi and for Ms. Sikela, 2 months with a written warning. You say that the PP was not in agreement with the outcome of the disciplinary process. Could you explain that?
Yes, the PP felt that the considering that is the seriousness of the charges and the ruling of the disciplinary of the chapters of death hearing, that is she felt that the sanction was not appropriate.
And what did she want to do?
Well, We discussed it and then they were given, that is, they were asked to make representations as to why they should not be dismissed.
And there was then an urgent application. They were brought back to work and there was a review pending on the part of the PPSA at the Labour Court, correct?
Correct, that's correct.
Of the disciplinary chairperson's decision?
Yes.
Okay. Now, if we turn to Mr. Nyembe, he was initially appointed as a special advisor for a period of 3 months on a fixed term contract.
That's correct.
So the special advisor is appointed at the behest of the public protector, correct?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
There's no advertising for a special advisor and a panel and an appointment.
Yes, that is correct.
And what happened when the 3 months period ended?
Then her contract came to an end.
Okay. He left the public protector's office after the 3 months.
That's correct, yes.
Right. There was then an issue raised, I think it emerged, if I remember correctly, in the media about the acting chief of staff not having the appropriate qualifications. Do you recall that, Mr. Chair?
Yes, I do recall that.
Was it correct?
What was correct?
Did she have the qualifications for the position of acting chief of staff?
No, she did not have.
She was then, she had been moved from customer services to be acting chief of staff. And how long was she in that position?
For plus minus a year, I can't remember the exact period.
This was one of the issues that had been raised by Advocate Matlawi, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Now, the post of chief of staff was then advertised.
That's correct.
Right. Mr. Nyembe then applied, he was interviewed, and he got the job, correct?
That's correct, yes. Right.
Now, if we come to Mr. Samuel, this issue related inter alia initially to an assault that took place in 2011. Correct?
That's correct.
But let's deal with the assault first. Right. And when did this come to your attention for the first time?
Towards the end of 2017, when you received a claim from the complainant who claimed an amount of 350,000 because he was assaulted by a PPSA official.
And there was no mention of this in his HR file, correct?
No, there wasn't, yes.
Right, and you were not employed in 2011, so you didn't have any knowledge of that?
No, I did not have any knowledge.
So I want to put the proposition to you, Mr. Chilele. If in 2011 the matter had been investigated by the CEO at all, if they had gone off and they did an investigation in Limpopo and they found that Mr. Samuel had indeed been intact and he was only defending himself, would there have been any basis for him to be charged in 2017 at all?
No.
Now, what informed you? You're not aware whether the CEO had made any contact with Mr. Mtetwa, who was then the CEO at the PPSA when this occurred?
No, I'm not aware of any contact that she made.
Right. And you sent Ms. Manyeki to go and talk to the employees at Limpopo, but there were no witnesses that could exonerate him or implicate him, correct? They had all only arrived on the scene after the altercation had already started.
That's correct.
Right. Now, you then say what had informed the decision was that he had paid an admission of guilt fine, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Right. And had he at the time told you that he he did that to avoid imprisonment, and that he was appealing both the conviction and the sentence.
Yes, he did inform me about that.
And the decision to institute disciplinary action, was that taken by the CEO, Mr. Mashlangu?
Yes.
Mr. Chilele, you were not able to tell me when I spoke to you as to when that decision was taken. Have you been able to find anything subsequent thereto that could tell us?
Yes, I did find a submission that went to PP. That is all that on the matter from HR, that is the legal services, that is on the matter. Where we were suggesting, we're recommending that.
Do me a favor, this was when I poured up because it was over. For when, just heat that one for me and then I'll drink it.
Sorry, Mr.
Okay, Chilele. Can I continue?
Continue, I think there was an interruption.
Okay, there was a submission that went to PP in February 2018, where we were advising that we should wait for the court process to be finalized. We should wait for the appeal. We should not charge Mr. Samuel. We should wait for the appeal. And then PP did not agree, that is, with that. She said that is the disciplinary process should proceed.
Mr. Chilele, I don't have that. In fact, you didn't have that yesterday when I spoke to you, correct?
Yes.
Before I'm accused of it. Could we arrange for you to give, to forward that to Mr. To Tembankosi Ngoma, so that we can have a look at it to do that. I'm going to leave that off. Do you then know what happened after February 2018?
Yes, there were a number of legal advices that were sought. The first one was the internal, and then the second one was from a firm of attorneys, external, and then the third one also was external from the senior counsel.
And what was the upshot of all of that?
The first one from internal and the second one from the attorneys were saying we should not proceed with the disciplinary process because the matter is old, and we did not have justifiable reasons why it took so long, that is, to deal with. And then the third one from the senior counsel was saying we can proceed with the matter, but we must have reasons why it took so long, that is, for us to take disciplinary action.
And what was your concerns?
My concern was that, I mean, this happened in 2011, this was 2018, so the delay was unreasonable, and we did not have, we did not have justifiable reasons, that is, to explain to whoever can ask why was the delay. So that was the concern. But at the same time, we're also concerned about the nature of the alleged, that is, a transgression. It was a serious matter. So there were those two issues, that it was a very old matter, but we wish we felt that we should not proceed. But at the same time, that it was a serious transgression, which we felt that it could not be left unattended.
Do you know how it came about that he only gets charged on this in February 2020? Was it March? Sorry, I must get the exact date. But he only gets charged, his evidence before the committee was that he was only charged after he had made a submission or provided an affidavit to the parliament, and that that come out in the media. And then he was charged on those charges and the assault charge together with that.
Yes, as I said, there was a lot of discussion when we became aware of the matter. There were several that is legal advices that were sought. The initial charge of Mr. Samuel was only on this, that is Limpopo matter. And then, but before that charge was issued, then these other things happened, and then they were added to that charge.
Okay. Right. There's this question of annual leave, which is dealt with in 120. And you say that annual leave effectively in 2021 was cancelled until the backlog project had been finalized. Correct?
That's correct.
That meant, or there's currently a process underway to pay people out for the leave that they were not permitted to take.
That's correct.
You know that there's a panel of attorneys that has been appointed. Are you involved in that process at all?
No, I'm not involved.
Okay. You have since 2021 again embarked on a wellness project to assist employees with challenges, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are my questions.
Thank you, Ilan. Thank you, Advocate Bauer. It's now just 34 minutes before one. We're going to take this opportunity and invite Advocate Mpofu and hand over to him for the beginning of cross-examination. Advocate Mpofu, I recognize you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, can I make a request? I'm going to try to do this as quickly as possible, but I'll probably give you an indication at about 1 o'clock. If I think that I can finish as quickly as I think I might, can I then ask that we go on, we just go straight through to about 1:30, so that when we break, we don't have to come back unless if there's another witness. Or I suppose there might be questions from the members. But I'll indicate at 1 o'clock, Chair, either way. Yeah, thank you.
That's in order, okay. Let's see.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. A good afternoon, Mr. Jalala.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mpofu.
Kunjani, please.
Sikhona khona kunjani wena?
Hayi, siyavuka nathi. All right, I'm going to try and give you where I can leading questions. And I hope then you'll just give me that's correct or that's not correct and all that, just as you've been doing with Advocate Bauer. That's what gave me the optimism that we might move fast. But sometimes these things change. Okay, so can we try that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chelele. Chairperson, can I, before I address the witness, can I just raise just two unrelated issues very quickly with you?
Go ahead, Advocate Mpofu.
Thank you, Chair. No, I just forgot in the morning when I was talking about housekeeping or issues not related to this witness. One was just to place on record, I think you indicated this in your introduction, but without elaborating, place on record that myself and Advocate Chabalala are in, Advocate Chabalala, sorry, are in Johannesburg and linking via Zoom. But the public protector and Advocate Matlape are attending personally in your committee over there in Cape Town. And just to explain the reason for that, Chair, is related to the discussion you and I were having this morning. We are trying as much as possible to tackle the issue of collecting evidence from witnesses. So we decided to split the team. So we have half of the team dealing with witnesses who are based here in Gauteng, and the other part of the team dealing with witnesses who are presently in Cape Town. So that's the only reason. Otherwise, we're able to manage the situation by WhatsApp or consulting during the breaks. I just wanted to place that on the record, Chair.
Oh, thank you. I thought you were in Rustenburg, so you're in Johannesburg now.
don't go there, Chairperson. Unless if you want me to stay. You want me? You find the tool and the tool and the comedy. I'll start a song, just now. All right. No, thank you, Chair. The other one is probably on a lighter note, like the one you've just raised. Well, in the morning when we were talking about the advice from the legal advisors of Parliament, I said that you were preaching to the converted. So I didn't explain that comment, Chair. I just wanted to say that I accept, as you probably know, that when there's a body that is advising, the one that is making the decision is not bound by it. So I accept that your committee was not bound by the advisor's advice. And I'll leave it there. I think you know where that one is going as well.
As the committee was not bound by the panel report.
Well, except that then it means the panel report was, no, the panel report was not advisory. It was a very serious matter that had judges.
Go ahead, let me not disturb you. Please proceed, go ahead.
And otherwise it was a waste of money. But that one will resolve in another forum. Okay, thank you. Mr. Chalela, back to you. You heard the discussion I had with the chair at the beginning about the relevance of your evidence. Our view is really that we are completely at sea as to why you have been called. But since you are here, I'm going to ask you a few questions just for your assistance. Do you accept that?
Yes, that's fine.
Thank you. Because you see, we don't want, this committee is now at the risk of turning itself into the HR department of the PPSA or some CCMA agency or the labor court, yeah. But I don't think that's the intention. So you accept that there are, the policies that you have listed there would be ordinary run-of-the-mill policies in an institution such as PPSA, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And if I understand your evidence correctly, really, you've just given us this morning, you know, what normally happens in an organization of this size. There'll always be some HR issues, some might be resolved internally, others might go to the CCMA, others might go to the labor court. That's the nature of the business, isn't it?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, okay. And the incidentally, how many employees in total does a PPSA employ, roughly?
Plus minus 350.
Good, so it's quite we'd call it a middle-sized to large employer, correct?
Yes.
All right, okay. Now, in the policies that you have put at paragraph 5, I think you just forgot one, or at least one that we are aware of. There might have been another one. So if you agree, we'll just ask if the members can insert it as 5.19. And that would be the security policy. Correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yes. And the only reason I'm raising that is because it's one of the policies that has been raised in this committee in a different context. That's the one that contains the requirements for security clearances, correct?
Correct.
And vetting and that kind of thing. Correct?
Correct, yes.
Yes. Okay. And now, there's just one thing that I would like you to assist us with, because it's been a bit fuzzy and not properly explained. Are you familiar with the PFMA by any chance?
Yes.
Okay. If you can't, again, I'm just taking advantage of you. So if you are not here as an expert on the PFMA, but so if you can't assist, just say so. But would you agree that although the public protector is referred to as the executive authority, correctly so, but strictly speaking, if you look at the PFMA, because the public protector is a unique entity, that in actual fact, the role almost straddles between the executive authority, but also as accounting authority. You would know, for example, in an entity, an SOE, the accounting authority would be a board in terms of the CC, the PFMA, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yes. So would you agree with my categorization that there is a little bit, there's always an overlap, for example, between the CEO, the chair, and the minister and all that. But would you agree with my characterization that although, strictly speaking, she is the executive authority, but she also carries out some of the functions that would ordinarily be carried out by the accounting authority, namely a board, for example?
Accounting authority, not the accounting officer, the CEO.
No, certainly not the account. Yes, no. Just to be clear, okay. Yeah, there's accounting officer, that's the CEO, that's clear. And then in a normal PFMA company, then there's the accounting authority, that's the board. Yes. Then there's the executive authority, usually the minister. Yes. I'm simply saying in this example, the PP's role can be likened to that of the minister insofar as she's the executive authority. But because there's no board at PPSA, the CEO basically also reports to her as if she was the board. Agreed?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, thank you. We'll converse that when we deal with the PP herself. But okay, thank you very much. I just wanted to clarify that. Then, the relationship then between you as part of management and the PP is also that she, there are certain things, I think you've explained this, there are certain things which might end with the CEO, but there are others which you might want to escalate to the PP, which you would do so if there was a board, correct? In a normal company.
Yeah. That's correct, yes.
Thank you.
That's correct, yes.
Thank you very much. And maybe let's just get rid of what I regard as the only issue on which your evidence might be of any marginal relevance. You have confirmed that when we talk about legal fees, That includes both the issues to do with the reviews, as well as what my learned friend Ms. Bauer called the labor-related legal issues, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yes. And then, are you familiar with the, are you a numbers man, or are you one of these people who don't like reading numbers?
I don't like reading numbers.
Okay, fine. Then I won't overburden you with the annual financial statements. But generally, then, are you aware, and you may or may not be, that as far as the report, the annual report is concerned, under the item called consulting fees, in that is embedded legal fees as well.
That's correct. Yes.
Yes, and legal fees. Oops. Oh, so I'm sorry, Chairperson. sorry, Chair. Yeah. Somebody just fallen off a chair.
Somebody yeah. Disturbing you there?
No, someone just fell off the chair, literally. but I don't have to use my pen, fortunately.
Yeah, okay, we could not see it, but we could see that it's disturbing.
Yes, yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. No, thank you, Chair. I was saying, Mr. Jalela, that that item also includes the consulting fees item in the AFS, also includes other consultants that might be of whatever nature that might be hired at PPSA, correct? In other words, it doesn't only include the external consultants that are legal in nature. To your knowledge, if you don't know, you don't know.
Can you repeat that? You broke.
Okay. You and I have agreed that the item called consulting fees in the annual financial statements includes both the what Ms. Bauer would call the review-related legal costs, but also the labor law-related costs. Right, yeah. Now, I'm saying it goes further than that. It also includes consulting fees, which are not even legal in nature, that item in the annual financial statements, if you know.
I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
Okay.
That's fine. Let's leave that. But, okay, I can then make the point more narrowly than I intended to, which is this. Because Mr. Samuel wanted us to believe.
Sorry, Advocate Mpofu. Sorry, Advocate Mpofu. Yes, sir. Just want to try to follow you.
Yeah.
Is Mr. Jalela saying it's not so if it involves, includes legal fees? Because you would have responded earlier and said yes.
No, Chair. Fees no. Chair, sorry. I'm sure the confusion is caused by the disturbance that happened there. No. My understanding, and Mr. Jalela will confirm, is that he agrees that the item consulting fees includes legal fees.
Okay.
He also agrees that that item of legal fees can be split into two, namely review-related legal fees and labor law-related legal fees, and
okay.
I suppose any other legal fees.
That's fine. Thank you.
Yes.
So that's fine.
Thank you. So the only issue Mr. Jalela was not able to assist us with are the other items which are not legal at all, which are embedded, other consultancy fees which are embedded in that item. Am I right, Mr. Jalela? Is my summary correct? Mr. Jalela?
That is correct, yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. I follow you now. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Now, I was then saying, I'm going to ask you then that question more narrowly than I intended. And it is this, because Mr. Samuel gave the impression to the committee that any movement in that item of consulting fees only has to do with what he called so-called reckless litigation related to the review matters. Surely then, even if you are not a numbers man, you know that that must be incorrect, because the movement in that item may be influenced, for example, by movement upwards or downwards in the labor law related legal costs. Agreed?
That's correct. It could be any of those that are in that budget item.
Yes. Or any other item, which I know you cannot confirm, any other item that might be embedded in the rubric of consulting fees, correct?
If those items are part of that, as I say, I can't confirm that.
Sure. But if they are, then movement in them would also influence the total, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, that's fine. All right. Then we then came to the issue of Audi letters. You can assist us there as well. Again, this has been, for lack of a better word, weaponized, in my view, in a negative way. But I see this as a good thing. As an HR person, would you agree that it is good practice to give somebody an opportunity to explain any possible allegations that might be leveled against them?
That's correct, yes.
Yes. And in fact, as the name implies, Audi means hear the other side. It's an opportunity for the employee to be heard, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And the and as you said, if the explanation is adequate, that's usually the end of the matter.
That's correct.
And it would be ludicrous, to put it mildly, if you had the statistics at your level of every time some line manager gives their subordinates an Audi letter, because that happens all the time. I mean, these are conversations that take place across the whole country at any given time, correct?
Yes, that is a line management function.
Yes. So if I'm sitting in the Mpumalanga office and one of the people who are working with me doesn't perform or doesn't come to work or comes to work drunk or whatever, I might give them an Audi letter. I don't have to then report that to head office, correct?
No, that's correct, yes.
The only time it will come to head office is if, let's say, they don't give an adequate explanation and maybe it's serious enough, and then they now have to be charged, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Thank you. Now, and in fact, in respect of one of the witnesses, we likened this to a warning letter, but it's actually not even a warning letter. It's prior to a warning letter, correct?
Yes, correct, it's prior.
Yes. It's merely an opportunity to respond, which may or may not be followed by a warning letter, depending on the content of the response, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. And I would say that, yeah, well, I think it's a commendable practice. Some employers may not have that kind of practice. So you'd agree then the process in a nutshell is that, let's now say your response to the Audi letter is not adequate. So you'd have the Audi letter as step one, correct?
Correct.
And then you then have the first verbal warning, correct?
Correct.
And then you'd have a written warning, maybe, depending on the nature of the offense, correct?
Correct.
And then the matter would be escalated to, or rather, a decision to charge you would be made, and then it would be sent, or rather, which one happens first? Is it first sent to the external investigators, or is the decision to charge made, which follows which?
No, the investigation can both be internal or external. It does not have to be external. So normally...
Fair enough. Let's whether it's internal or external, which one precedes which?
Is the investigation first, which will confirm whether their allegations are substantiated or not.
Okay, good. Okay, so then step 4 or 5 in my sequence would then be the investigation. Let's not qualify it whether it's external or internal. So there'd be the investigation, and then let's say then there'll then be the decision to charge. Let's assume the investigation again says there's enough wrongdoing, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. And then once that decision is made, again, depending on the seniority of the person or the seriousness of the charge, then it would be referred to an external person to chair the DC, whether it's an advocate or an attorney or somebody like that. Or let me put it like this. Again, that may be external or internal. Let's just say a chairperson would be appointed, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and only then as step 7 in that chain, if you are found guilty by that chairperson, then you whatever happens will happen, correct?
Yes.
All right. And this is just in relation to the case of Ms. Mukhaladi and the other persons. As an HR person, you know that once again, we go back to this issue of the issue of the week of whether a recommendation is binding or not binding. So a chairperson, the external chairperson cannot fire anyone. They only make a recommendation, correct?
Yeah, that was the issue with our disciplinary hearing, because our disciplinary hearing says that is he makes a final decision which must be implemented.
Yes, and the code.
The code, yes.
Yes.
Disciplinary, yes.
Right, but in the case of these two ladies and one gentleman, I think, who has since deceased, the chairperson had explicitly said that he was making a recommendation, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yes. And as you know, or should know, or well, everyone should know, a recommendation in those terms then eventually depends on the actual decision maker to approve or disapprove, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. And of course, they can't just say we don't approve or disapprove. There must be a reasonable basis. They have to give reasons, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And in this case, according to you, the reasons that the public protector had made for not accepting or rejecting the recommendation was, you said, the seriousness of the charges. And you didn't mention this one, but I'm just asking you, just from your memory, there was also the issue of the breakdown in the relationship, correct?
Okay, I can't remember that one.
I can't remember the second one. That's fine. No, the documents will show. But in any event, the point is that the public protector gave her reasons why she was not accepting the recommendation, correct?
Yes, except that the our court, as I said, did not make provision for that.
No, that's not what I'm asking you. Did the public protector give her reasons for not accepting the recommendation?
Yes, she did.
Yes. Your code, we know what it says. I think it's part of the documentation. But you and I have, I thought we had agreed that despite the code, the chairperson in that particular case had specifically couched his finding as a recommendation, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. All right.
Mbofu?
Yes, chairperson.
Maybe before you look for the next questions, can we pause there and take a lunch break? We'll be back at 2. Thank you very much.
Okay. Recording stopped.
Okay.
The recording has stopped.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Chairperson?
Yes, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to check with your permission and maybe that of the members, if we can come back quicker than 2 o'clock, because I'm really not going to be long.
Quicker is what, 1:45?
1:45 or even 1:30. 1:45 maybe, to be fair. Yeah.
Okay, we'll push for 1:45. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
We'll work towards 1:45. Let's take a lunch break back at 1:45.
Thanks, Chair.